I'm Cal Bayer Anderson. I'm a toxicologist with the EPA in the Design for the Environment branch. I'm really happy to be here and be able to talk about what we do in terms of safer product labeling. I have no relationships or conflicts of interest to disclose. So in my talk today, I'll start with a little bit about our program and what we do. I'll move on to the standards and criteria that we use to evaluate chemicals in the products that we label. I'll talk a little bit about the Safer Chemical Ingredient List, which is new to our website, and hopefully I'll be able to touch on some of the challenges that we face in the search for safer ingredients. So the Design for the Environment program is a non-regulatory program within the EPA, and we've been developed to incentivize the development of safer products, focusing on the identification of and selection of safer chemical ingredients. We do consider life cycle impacts as well, but we tend to focus on the chemicals and their hazard profiles. So a central component is how we evaluate chemicals using EPA technical tools and expertise. A lot of this was developed in 30 years of evaluating chemicals under the New Chemicals Program within EPA. And often these are data-poor chemicals, so we're using not only measured data, but analogous chemicals and structure-activity relationships to fill data gaps to the best extent that we can. Also, because we're a voluntary program, we welcome and multi-stakeholder participation. So we have stakeholder groups that advise our work and provide important feedback. There are two main programs within the Design for the Environment branch, and that's the Safer Product Labeling Program, and that's what I'll be focusing on today, as well as the Alternatives Assessment Program. I'll give a little bit of background on that. So the Safer Product Labeling Program, the goal is to differentiate products in the marketplace for consumers and purchasers. So ingredients are grouped by functional use and evaluated with criteria to distinguish among the alternatives and options that we have. The chemicals that meet our criteria can be used in products, and those products can bear the Design for the Environment logo, which is up in the upper right-hand corner, and listed on our website. It can be used in marketing materials by the product manufacturers. The Alternatives Assessment Program is a little bit different. Our goal is not to identify, you know, what's a safer chemical, but to identify alternatives and present that information in a framework so that folks can make informed decisions, understand what trade-offs might be present, and avoid that the unintended consequences of regrettable substitution. So turning to the Safer Product Labeling Program, before a product is allowed to use this label, it must meet a variety of criteria, including criteria on human health effects, environmental effects, and fate, VOC content, which is particularly important for broader air quality issues, packaging, and there's now auditing and ingredient disclosure requirements. And one point I want to make is we have an advantage because we operate under confidential business information requirements. We do get to see the list of ingredients that are in the full product. We're not allowed to disclose them, but we do use our influence and incentives to kind of nudge folks in the direction of greater disclosure. So at this point, we have almost 3,000 products that bear the DFE label. That's over 600 manufacturers. Most of the products at this point are still industrial and institutional, so that would be your institutional cleaners for facilities and things like that. Although we do cover a range of product categories, including many consumer products, over 800 at this point. And there are many opportunities for us to expand into additional product categories, and if anyone wants to discuss that after this session, I'd be happy to talk to you about it. So in terms of the requirements and the criteria, we do have whole product requirements such as pH, and we do look for synergistic effects. We have product performance requirements and ingredient disclosure requirements, and there's an example of the ingredient disclosure on the right. Our criteria for the actual ingredients, what we do is we think of chemicals in terms of their functional use category. What does it do in the product? Why is it in the product? Is it a surfactant? Is it a solvent? Is it a chelant? Is it a fragrance? And then we look at those chemicals as a group, evaluate them based on criteria for human health, environmental health, and environmental fate, and we basically plot them in terms of their hazard, and we're looking for chemicals that fall on the safer end of the hazard continuum. So once a product manufacturer demonstrates that the product meets our criteria, they sign an agreement, which lasts for 3 years, and there are auditing requirements embedded in this. So this concept of safer, so we're looking for safer chemicals, and as we all know, risk is a function of both hazard and exposure, and safer is equal to lower risk or less risk. And the conventional approach is to control exposure, but as we know, exposure controls can and do fail. It's often a chemical may be limited in one product, but we may be using 10 different products with that same chemical. It's really complicated. So one alternative approach is to substitute with chemicals that are lower in hazard. So this is predicated on the understanding the relative continuum of hazard. When we look at chemicals as a group, solvents, for example, where do they fall on this hazard spectrum? And we try to identify those chemicals that are lower in hazard and provide that information to product formulators so that they can use those chemicals that are lower in hazard in their products. So again, we're still operating within the risk paradigm, but we're giving people an additional tool to think about how to select chemicals for use in consumer products. So out of this effort, we've been at this for more than 10 years now. We've developed quite a long list of chemicals that meet the DFE safer chemical criteria. And we make this list public. So it's available on our website. The website's right up there. The chemicals are organized again by functional use, surfactants, solvents, chelants, etc. We do protect confidentiality within this framework. And it's a living list, so it is updated regularly. So we include on the list the Chemical Abstract Service, or CAS number, the common name, the EPA inventory name, that's important for regulatory purposes, the functional class. We also have a color coding system of that indicates whether the chemical falls on the green or more in the yellow end of the spectrum. What's not included, the source of the chemical, manufacturer, trade name, etc. So this is what the website looks like, the Safer Chemical Ingredients List, and you can see the functional use categories. And here's an example of chelating agents that are listed on the skill, Safer Chemical Ingredient List. And you can see the green circle represents that we have a full data set for this chemical, and we've evaluated it and consider it to be on the green or safer end of the hazard spectrum. If there's a half circle, that means we've had to supplement the data with an analog a model or some type of structure activity relationship estimate. If there's a yellow triangle, chemicals that will get a yellow triangle, for example, are ones that that are known sensitizers. If it's a known sensitizer, such as many fragrance chemicals are. It can still be used in the product, but that's subject to limitations in terms of how much it can be used, and it must be listed on the product label. Okay, 5 minutes. Now, we do update our standards and criteria from time to time. This is a process which involves stakeholder input. We convene stakeholders, discuss the challenges or the issue at hand, what the proposed fixes might be and or updates, and get their feedback and input and negotiate a path forward. So right now, we have had to modify the solvents criteria, for example, to account for California has very strong regulations limiting the use of volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, in consumer products. And we've had to grapple with that within our criteria. Preservatives are another class of chemicals that are very challenging that we've been working with stakeholders to carve a path forward. Same thing with polymers and colorants and other related classes. The fragrances are also pose a challenge because of the presence of sensitizing components or constituents in those products. So that's something that we are the subject of a lot of discussion amongst our stakeholder groups. So, for example, with the fragrances, we came up with version 2.0 for the fragrances, and what we found was that compliance was very challenging. Our goal was to eliminate or reduce sensitizers, and we found that we couldn't meet that goal. And so that's when we went back and said, okay, we can include sensitizers, we're going to cap it at the amount that can be there, and they have to put it on the label. So that's an example of the type of negotiation process that we go through working with stakeholders to come up with a practical, workable process to move us in the right direction. So with that, I'll take any clarifying questions. My contact information is up on the screen, and I'll also happy to talk outside the meeting as well. So, thank you.
Do we have a couple questions for Kat?
I was wondering if there was different criteria for your industrial versus consumer product?
In some cases, yes. There are. And again, it's this going back to that, think of that continuum and where chemicals fall on the continuum and what you need to do in order to make a product that actually is functional. So, and all the criteria are posted on our website. So we try to make this as transparent as possible. And we're always happy to discuss. Right. That's an interesting question. We do routinely screen. Often the lists that are out there are the negative lists. So we do routinely screen against those lists that because they represent chemicals that are of interest for a variety of reasons to stakeholders. So we do screen against those. What we're looking for is to generate a positive list. So we're working the other side of the spectrum to get together. So I would hope that there's very little overlap. One thing I do want to point out, though, just to clarify, is that we don't look at single issue chemicals as single issues. So when we're screening against human health, we're looking at acute tox, repeat dose, carcinogenicity, mutagenicity, reproductive, developmental, neurotox, the whole full spectrum. So because we recognize that there can, if you look at a single issue, you might miss the other thing that's lurking behind the corner. So.
Are you able to pull a product off the market?
No. Nope. We're just recognizing products that meet criteria. So it's not a regulatory approach at all.
Let's take one more question in the back and then
so how
They come to us.
Thanks.